Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And happy Friday to you. I am Rich McFadden from the Radio America Network, in for Greg Corumbus, along with Jim Garrity from National Review Online for your Friday martinis. As usual, we will have your good, bad, and crazy martinis. And trust me, today's crazy is a doozy. So stick around for this, and we'll get to it in just a minute. But first, we will hit our good martini, and the good martini is a little bit wait and see. Have the Russians actually killed the leader of ISIS? Jim, are you buying it or no?
I am not. I hope it is true. It would be great if it was true. It could really be, you know, look, there are a lot of ways Russia has been an obstacle to us, opposed us, pursued completely contrary goals to us. And that's not even getting into the election meddling and hacking and things like that. Having said that, if a Russian bombing in Syria and Iraq had managed to actually kill Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the leader of the Islamic State, in an airstrike, we would be pretty darn grateful, and we would be pretty excited about that.
Agreed.
This was a Russian defense ministry who claimed they did it in late May, and saying that they were still trying to verify this. A little bit later, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says, well, we don't have 100% confirmation of the information. Rich, the reason I'm not convinced, I remember way back in like 2000 or so, I was working for a .com, and word came over a wire, or this rumor had gone around that Saddam Hussein had been assassinated in Iraq. So I talked to a bunch of defense experts, and they all say, look, the moment that happens, we may not know directly, but we will know something has happened because of the way everybody else in Iraq will respond. You'll see military forces mobilizing. You'll see it'll be like a whole hornet's nest will get stirred up when something like that happens, out of people generally trying to position themselves or you know, fill a leadership vacuum,
yep,
maybe even a competition over leadership. And my understanding is we haven't seen any of that on a level to suggest that Baghdadi has bitten the dust. So I'd love it for it to be true, but I'm you know, rather,
yeah,
skeptical at the moment.
And me too. And the other wait and see moment is that apparently this happened in a town that is under heavy attack by all of the forces from everywhere. And the GPS and satellites all up in the sky can see every single inch of this town. Why would he go to that town with 100 of his medium and high level managers? I'm going to wait and see. I hope it's true. But then the other aspect of this, Jim, is, if it's not true, why would the Russians lie about it? What do they have to gain? Or do they just simply think they did and don't care whether it's true or not?
Yeah, I mean, look, it may be that they've gotten something that indicates this or some piece of information that is from an unreliable source, but they want to put it out there just to get credit for it. They just want to be able to brag. Right now, people give them a lot of very deserved grief about whacking and killing civilians in Syria. So now they could say, hey, look, you may not like our bombing, you know, methods, but we did get Baghdadi, if that pans out. Yeah, the other reason, which is kind of just unusual, I mean, as much as it's very interesting how much Baghdadi does not loom in the minds of America and the world the way that Osama bin Laden did. Part of that is that Osama bin Laden semi-regularly would put out those audio tapes and those videotapes, and kind of he very much enjoyed the media spotlight. The reason you always see the same two or three Baghdadi stock photos when he's, you know, somebody's doing a news story on ICE, I believe he's only made two or three public appearances. He is really low profile for a guy who's leading arguably the most dangerous and menacing terror group in the world.
Well, it makes him harder to identify, which, you know, obviously is his want when he's roaming around from cave to cave or cubby to cubby there. So, all right, well, that's the good martini, and we'll stay tuned and watch and see if that actually does come true, and we all hope it does, but we will see what happens there. So let's go on to our bad martini. The bad martini is Trump is back to tweeting again and criticizing the deputy AG and anybody else he can get his hands on.
Yeah, so this has been a problem for Trump throughout. One of the things that I thought had kind of been a silver lining or a saving grace or a point that Republicans could emphasize is that as of May 9th, the president was not under investigation by the FBI. Nothing in the investigation into Russian meddling had pointed to Trump personally, and that we could kind of use that to throw some cold water on this controversy to say, look, you know, at this point, this is maybe if your name is Michael Flynn, you got something to worry about. Maybe some of these other folks on the periphery, but the president himself was not under investigation, and we should stop hyping it as if this was the next Watergate. Well, you know, we can't say this is premature speculation anymore. We can't say we don't know if the president under investigation, because he just tweeted, I am under investigation. And of course, and then, you know, his wording is a little vague there, but he's saying he's under investigation for firing the FBI director by the guy who recommended he fire the FBI director. That appears to be, I mean, it's funny, it's ironic, but, you know, he's referring to Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. And, you know, first of all, Rosenstein said, look, my memo did not say you should do this. My memo said you have the authority to do this. But right. It is a really odd and unusual circumstance. You got to figure that the White House counsel and Trump's personal lawyers are probably begging him to get off of Twitter, because every time you do that, it gives an additional possibility of explaining motive.
Right.
Basically, you want to give anybody who's thinking to prosecute you as little material to work with as possible. And the president won't do that.
He has no self-control, zero self-control when it comes to that account. So, but here's what confuses me. Let me ask you this, okay? He is under investigation for obstruction. Mm-hmm. Obstructing a crime that they can't prove. And this is my thing with government prosecutions. They can never convict you of the thing they say you did. But if they catch you lying about the thing that they say you did or they accuse you of, look out, because you're going down, because they will hold on to that and they will take you to the mat with it.
Yeah. There's a guy named is on Twitter named Popat, who is a lawyer, who described having a client who he told him, look, the FBI wants to talk to you. You don't have to. We recommend you don't. And the client was basically, who are you? Don't tell me what to do. And he talked to the FBI. Mm. He talked to the FBI for several hours. He talked to the FBI for several hours while being videotaped. Mm. And during the process, he perjured himself. And during the process, he lied to investigators. And by the end of and so at one point, the FBI investigators, who are doing everything short of high-fiving each other, knowing that they've just nailed this guy to the wall. At one point, he says, did your lawyer tell you not to talk to us? And the guy says, yes. And he says, why did you not take your lawyer's advice? And he says, because I'm a grown man who can make his own decisions. Yes,
clink.
Yeah, you are, but that doesn't mean you're gonna make the right decisions. And in this case, look, the thinking is, when you look at the totality of what we know about the interactions between Trump and Comey, the simplest explanation for why Trump fired Comey is that Comey kept telling Trump that he wasn't under investigation privately, and Trump really wanted him to say that publicly. And because Comey was, you know, didn't know what tomorrow holds, he didn't want to come out and say so publicly. Unsurprised, so eventually Trump's like, fine, you're out of here. You know, I'm going to use my catchphrase, you're fired. Now, we can argue whether that's a good reason to fire the FBI director or a bad reason to fire the FBI director, but it's different from saying, I am firing you because I like Mike Flynn and I don't want you to investigate or prosecute Mike Flynn. If you do it for that latter reason, then it's a much stronger case for obstruction of justice than if it's just, Comey, I am fed up with you, tell people I didn't do anything wrong. You get into a gray area here in which they will be able to prove this. My suspicion is Robert Mueller. It's interesting to see how much bashing you see of Mueller these days from Trump associates. I have somebody from the White House, somebody who is familiar with the thinking of the White House, who's totally not in the White House and do not pay any attention to the way I begun the sentence. Everyone got to protect my sources. had a perspective that was less negative on Mueller than everybody else so far. It was basically like, look, Mueller looks like he's working fast. Maybe he can get to the bottom of this and we are not, panicking or flipping out. And here's the thing. The question is, does Robert Mueller want to say, yeah, this looks like obstruction of justice to us, which immediately sets up, every Democrat in Congress is going to call for impeachment.
Right.
And that will immediately be the dominant, Republicans will probably be reluctant or resistant to that. You'll probably have the entire 2018 midterms focusing on impeachment. And how do you think the country will respond how do you think Trump voters will respond if he gets impeached? Or like you're really opening up Pandora's box if you go down this. Now, what Mueller could very well do is say, you know, this is kind of like the Hillary situation. He really shouldn't have done it, but I can't prove criminal motive. So I would just urge the president to be more careful in his communications with
FBI. And that's where I think you'll end up. I think that all of this is a dog and pony show because, again, the underlying charge, there is nothing there.
Yeah, I mean, should the president not make comments that could be interpreted as, boy, I'd hate to see you prosecute Mike Flynn? Yeah, this is bad judgment. The president should, you know, should be more careful and not make comments that can be interpreted that way. Having said all of that, I don't think that, yeah, look, there are lawyers who know more about this than I do, but I don't think it raises the level of obstruction of justice because it's too vaguely worded. And the second thing is, I don't think you impeach a president over this.
Yeah.
And we'll see how this shakes out. But it would just be helpful if the president would stop tweeting about it.
Put the Twitter down. Step away from the Twitter, Mr. President. All right. Speaking of the crazy Twitter, let's get into our crazy martini of the day. And boy, this is a humdinger. I love stuff like this. It's juicy. It's got everything you need to be a crazy martini. Alex Jones, the talk radio host who believes in every conspiracy under the sun, was doing an interview with Megyn Kelly, who is now with NBC, and decided he didn't really trust her and decided to secretly tape their conversations. And I guess it turns out it's a good thing he did.
So I was among those who was not pleased when I saw the first news that Megyn Kelly had interviewed and was setting up to do a profile for her new program on NBC. First of all, she referred to him as a conservative talk show host.
No.
Now, Rich, you're a conservative talk show host.
Yep.
Right?
I do not want to be in that group.
I was going to say, when you hear Alex Jones describe, don't you want to start singing the old Police song, "Don't Stand So Close to Me"?
Yeah.
He's not. General, I have not heard a single conservative complaining that they're putting chemicals in the water to make the frogs gay. I have yet. There's no panel on that at CPAC. I don't think it's in the Republican platform. I think most conservatives believe that the frogs should choose their sexuality for themselves.
Hey, here's the deal. Listen, man, there is an audience out there for everything, and he has found an audience for his shtick, and it works wonderfully for him. So more power to him. But yeah, conservative, I don't know.
If people really are bothered by this, let's say, for example, probably the most controversial thing he's ever said, you know, supposing that Sandy Hook was a hoax and other crazy stuff like that. And then the parents of the Sandy Hook victims are understandably livid about this and who are saying, look, Megyn Kelly, you're giving this guy a platform. You're giving this guy a spotlight. You're taking somebody who I kind of sit down and wonder whether we say, oh, this guy's crazy. No, really. I wonder if Alex Jones is genuinely psychologically there's something wrong with him. And yet instead of getting him therapy or somebody to make, you know, something to help treat mental issues, we've given him a platform and a spotlight, turned him into a guru. You know, we've done everything possible to feed what troubles him instead of trying to treat it. But so Megyn Kelly kept said, no, this is not a puff piece. This is not a soft focus profile. This is, you know, designed to be a hard hitting real look at him. And people don't know about who he is. And we need to show it because the part of like, Alex Jones goes on to his radio show and his web show. And he does this like for 3 hours a day. What are we going to get from this interview with Megyn Kelly that we're not going to get otherwise? Well, according to tapes that Alex Jones made of their conversations setting up this interview, she said, you'll be fine with it. I'm not looking to portray you as a boogeyman. The craziest thing of all would be if some of the people who have seen this insane version of you in your heads walk away saying, you know, I see the dad in him. I see the guy who loves those kids and is more complex than I've been led to believe. So, Rich, does this sound like a hard-hitting expose on Alex Jones that's really going to hold him accountable?
It doesn't. No. So here she is talking to him, and here's what he taped unbeknownst to her. And that's going to be another story, is whether she can sue him for taping him without her knowledge. But here she is trying to get him to agree to the interview.
You know, you just became very fascinating to me. I just sort of thought you were this maybe, you know, one-dimensional guy, like this is your thing. My goal is for your listeners and the left, you know, who will be watching some on NBC to say, wow, that was really interesting. And then the next time I want to get somebody, they're going to say, look what you did to Alex Jones. It's not going to be some gotcha hit piece. I promise you that.
Uh-oh. So then it ends up, it was a gotcha hit piece.
Well, I mean, it hasn't aired yet, but she's, you know, once people start saying, you're giving this nut job a platform who has really said horrible things about Sandy Hook. She's like, no, this is really hard hitting. So there's two options here. either it's a puff piece in which Megyn Kelly looks terrible for giving, you know, him for giving a soft focus, a soft focus profile on somebody who really deserved a more skeptical, probing and hard edged examination. And then the second version that she promised Alex Jones, it was going to be a really nice puff piece. And then she turned around and did a hard for, you know, like there's no way that Megyn Kelly could come out of this looking good. Right?
No, she's in trouble. Yeah. And apparently she went after him pretty hard in the interview. It wasn't the lovey-dovey friendly conversation that they had had just previous to it. So I think he's expecting a hit piece, and that's why he was preemptive.
And, you know, for all of his nuttiness, maybe he was well prepared for this. The thing that, you know, I wrote about this earlier this week, and I just had, I'd really love to kind of put questions to Megyn Kelly to say, what is the news value of this? Like most of us who have any familiarity with Alex Jones know, the guy, in my astute psychological assessment, is cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. he is, you know, willing to say things. He's absolutely shameless. Like most of us would be horrified to even contemplate saying out loud, oh, I think Sandy Hook was a hoax. Right? I mean, it's just a terrible thing to say. And it's not, you know, but he doesn't mind that. And he just eats controversy. He thrives on it. There's no way you're going to shame him into backing down or something like that.
Well, he cashes his checks with it. Then so that's what works for him.
Yeah. And so the question is then, it's like, so Megyn Kelly, what are you doing other than giving him a bigger platform by somebody you claim you oppose, you claim you disapprove of this, but you really seem to be doing him a giant favor. Now, again, I think this has been an awkward start for her programming. And again, it's bad. You know, this is all very bad, and very few people will forget that she began this all by saying, hey, America, this is a conservative talk show host.
Well, I think probably what she hoped would happen is that they would get this kind of attention on this piece, but she didn't see it landing this way. I think she thought she was probably going to get some explosive bomb that everybody was going to talk about, and you have to see it, and this totally got flipped on its head on her.
You know, there are certain figures who are these, like, controversy mongers in our public media. And it's always some version of, can you believe what Alex Jones just said? Can you believe what Bill Maher just said, or Piers Morgan? And my answer is always, yeah, I can.
Yeah.
They have built their career on saying controversial things.
Exactly.
I don't find it surprising at all. I don't see why I need to rush over and see what this person has said. And my suspicion was that she wanted to have some sort of, you won't believe what Alex Jones said today. Well, I believe it. Sorry, not news to me.
Well, there it is. Our good, bad, and crazy martinis to end this week. And one thing is guaranteed, Jim, that they all will be around on Monday for us to discuss again, because neither one of them is going away over the weekend. So check back with us on Monday, and we will get you caught up to speed after your weekend away. And until then, I am Rich McFadden with the Radio America Network, along with Jim Garrity from National Review Online. Have a great weekend.